Welcome to The Pursuit of Purpose, a podcast made possible by SkyLife Success, a SkyPass Group company. Join Krish Dunham, an author and speaker whose messaging has been described as the junction where God's ability and man's availability meet hope's accessibility.
Greetings, dear ones, and welcome to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. Sorry for the lengthy hiatus, and some of you have stayed diligent and listened to some of the rebroadcast of previous podcasts that we had up there. We kind of put the ones that we thought would matter. Today is almost the middle of the 6th of February in the year 2023. Since last we talked in a live format, or at least in a new format, I've had a couple of jaunts here and there. I actually spent about a week and a half in Eastern Europe, itinerating in Albania in the cities of Durres, in Tirana, and in Vlore, and then ended up making a drive to the country of Kosovo, which on this itinerant map has been country number 76, to do some sales training beginning in that region. In a couple of weeks, I will head back to India, where we're beginning to start some operations there. Upon return, there will be two trips to Canada, and then there will be another jaunt back to India in late June, early July. So the market seemed to have opened up, and the opportunities to go speak have opened up. One of the highlights of the last 6 weeks was being able to speak at a university in a state fairly close to home, where I got to address the young men and women of a group called the Patriots Club. Even though I'm a first-generation immigrant to these here United States, I know I have an audience from around the world, but I've had a bent for American history, memorized by rote a lot of things. So amidst the other things I get to do, people invite me here and there to share my patriotic fervor and give renditions of some of the historic speeches that have shaped this nation over a period of time. But today, in a lighter vein, I want to address the topic of mirror, mirror on the wall. As we head into 2023, 1 month already under our belt, the pandemic now in the distant past, inflation being tackled, huge amounts of debt being racked up, the global bayonet being wielded, patronizing people are giving us information, politicians are politicizing just about every situation. We are at that point where I thought it may be an important part to take a look at the mirror and go back to the proverbial reflection that defines all of us, the man or the woman in the mirror. Tongue in cheek, with a little jest, a little sarcasm, and a little brevity, I wrote a poem back in early December called Mirror, Mirror on the Wall. Why don't I read that for you? We'll have some fun as I try to read the rendition that is my own, and then maybe dissect and try to give you a few ideas. But keep those thoughts coming, keep those questions coming, keep the relativism of where we are as a populace at the front. The culture war is being lost on just about every angle. The morality has declined. We have devolved into a debauchery that is unspecified in terms of its magnitude. Every issue that has been sacred at one time is now up for debate. Right is definitely wrong, and wrong is definitely right. So let's look at this mirror, mirror on the wall, and ask ourselves the reflective questions of who we are as a populace and what we can do to engender ourselves or engineer ourselves to be effective. Mirror, mirror on the wall, please reflect the truth for us all. Why the blur in what we see? What is wrong with humanity? Said the mirror to the why, truth can never be a lie. Changing how you act and look, it only morphs man, ink and book. For calling black the real non-white and short and unfair feature plight, it does not change the natural call that some are white and others tall. Pretending that you are a cat is just the purring of a fool, or standing upside on a hat, it tells no one that you are a stool. Some things matter as a fact that shows us all how to act, for no one cares what you think, they only sigh if you stink. So take a bath and look at you, the one he made real and true. Mirror, mirror on the wall, here I am, what's my call? Said the mirror to the what? O special one of God's lot, make life simple and living too, let one plus one remain as two. Some ignore and some don't care how you color or what you wear. Your presence is not in our way to ignore what you do and say. Listen to the mirror on the wall. It has reflected since Adam's fall. Before you ask me to budge, remember you are not the judge. When we choose, we all can look at life's truth and all it took, that we are short and fat and all, black and white and even tall. So choose the mirror that will show beauty as the created glow, and try not to be just what you feel. The facts do offer a better deal. And as I wrote that, and as I laughed amidst to myself, I almost began to shed a tear, because the travesty of the tragedy, white is a privilege now. It is a color that is associated somehow with some kind of malevolence over a period of time. Granted that history has not been kind to certain populaces and has allowed the victors of other demographics to enjoy the spoils of their conquest. But history is just that history. We can either let our past beat us or we can let it teach us. Why are we at this very incredible cusp of humanity where, when we look at the reflected glory of what God created, we don't see the intended splendor of one of 8 billion looking unique in every attribute from the cellular structure to the hairs on our head? The creator of the universe made us all so unique and specific, it's almost laughable when we try to broadly redefine large clusters of people based on feelings while broadly ignoring the facts. While this used to be considered a Western malady or some kind of a promise that was limited to the affluent, what we see today across the broad spectrum of humanity is this cry for victimization. It is almost as if we desire with our heart's content that we want to be victimized in some way, so we would have a support group to go to that can then pacify us with a here, here, or a there, there. Meanwhile, at the very top, the very cabal of people who run these things into the ground, as one man said, just follow the money and you'll realize that maybe in all your feelings and all of the dancings that you're going around and in the confusion that surrounds your own identity, you are actually being made a puppet to others. Someone is pulling the strings, and that divine puppeteer is treating you like a marionette. And you're dancing to the tune of something you actually fundamentally and vehemently disagree with. Sitting with a group of people the other day, I thought to myself, how can anybody wake up one day and with just common sense of 1 + 1 = 2, begin to even unravel where we are as a humanity? The concept that someone can think that they are a cat and another person think they are a moose, and the person who thinks they're a cat thinks they have more right to think like a cat because thinking like a moose is just absurd. Isn't that fascinating? There are actually entire videos of people with cat talk. They're giving the emotive resonance to the different ways in which they purr to reflect whether they're angry or fearful, doubtful or harmful. And somehow we have to take them at face value because ultimately, you know, feline and feminine or something like that are a lot closer than being a feline versus a moose. But if you look at it in the broader spectrum of mirror, mirror on the wall, I mean, we were made man and woman. We were made to look at each other in God's eyes. Some of us with differences, some of us with defects, some of us with abnormalities, some of us with deformities. Some of us grew up with chronic conditions that allowed us to live a life of marginalization, and some of us perished before our time when we could even make a mark on earth. Some live to a ripe old age with all of these maladies and the malignance that comes with them and made yeoman contributions to humanity. And that is the beauty of the world we live in. When we look in the mirror and you see something unique, remember there are 8 billion people on planet Earth, and each one of them has a defined divine reflection that is the image of the very Creator God. God made you in that image. He made you in His image. Now, you may feel different, you may feel marginalized, and at your feeling level, you may feel that you have been compromised. But ask yourself in the grander scheme of things, by just dancing to the tune of someone else's puppet strings, are you indeed happier? Or do you just now have a new group of people who somehow understand how you feel, and it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things if that new feeling actually gave you some kind of a liberated hope? Mirror, mirror on the wall, said the mirror to the what? O special one of God's own lot, make life simple and living too. Let 1 + 1 remain as 2. You know, listen to the mirror on the wall. It has reflected since Adam's fall. Before you ask me to budge, remember, you are not the judge. And that brings me to the third component, which is the very malevolence in which these people are leveling their hatred against one another. It's not important that you can have dissent or you disagree. It's not even an imperative that you may think different. It is almost considered a blanket bigotry that if you do not subscribe to the fact that humanity can evolve in whichever way it chooses, and they can play God in every act of their own motives, and you don't subscribe to that, then you're somehow on the outside. How absurd is that thought process? Yes, granted, you have come to the autonomy of your own thought, and the autonomous nature of your thought has said, I want to think, act, and feel this way. Why then do you disagree if I want to think, act, and feel in the exact opposite way? Am I not entitled to my own autonomy? And that's the irony of the stupidity of the arguments we are finding right now, because apparently autonomy is only good if you subscribe to what someone has already defined as autonomy. Well, that is a logical fallacy. The whole concept of auto meaning self and nomos meaning law, which means my autonomous thought of regulating myself, has to be individual and sacred to me. You cannot dictate how I think, act, and feel, and you cannot legislate that feeling either. So this is what's been on my chest today, and I would ask you all to have a rally cry. I remember Thomas Jefferson's quote from yesteryear, which he said, if tyranny becomes law, then rebellion has to become the act in which we participate. It is our duty. Now, I'm not talking about armed rebellion, that's a different issue, or I'm not talking about protesting rebellion. I'm talking about basic currency of thought. Do you have the decency and the fundamental individuality to question thought instead of being pummeled in such a way that you become a sheep and being led aside by somebody who's not a shepherd who actually cares for the sheep? And even though you think you're sheep being led by a shepherd, you actually might be a rat being led by a Pied Piper. Be careful of which tune you dance to if you've not asked yourself whether you have allowed yourself to have some individuality. Go back to the mirror and say, mirror, mirror on the wall. Some things matter as a fact that show us all how to act, for no one cares what you think. They only sigh if you stink. Pretending that you're a cat, it is just the purring of a fool. Or standing upside on a hat, it tells none that you are a stool. Hope you had fun with this little tongue-in-cheek, sarcasm, wit, jest, whatever it is. But I'm glad to be back with you with another edition of The Pursuit of Purpose. God bless you. See you down the road.
And that concludes another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose with Krish Dunham, brought to you by SkyLife Success. Please subscribe, rate, and visit us on the web at krishdunham.com and skylifesuccess.com, where you can find our social media links and access to additional resources. Till next time, happy learning and happy living.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. This is your host, Krish Dunham, coming to you today from my office in Dallas, Texas. We're in between jaunts. We've just finished a successful tour of Eastern Europe and are in the preparation in about 2 weeks to head back to the motherland of India, which will take me to 3 different cities and multiple venues. Today, I want to embark down the road of something that we created many moons ago called the currency of thought, the price you pay to think and the cost you bear for not. So during the course of calendar year 2023, from time to time, we'll bring you a currency of thought episode. I'm not going to give them a nomenclature in terms of chronology by 1, 2, and 3. But we'll tackle different subjects during that time. So the broader heading will just be currency of thought. The byline is always going to be the price you pay to think and the cost you bear for not. We're going to deal with the futility of ignorance of our time and the futility of imagination of our time, or the abundance of ignorance and the futility of imagination. I'm going to deal with two subjects today. One is about past failures and present accountability, and the other is about ascribing authority to ignorance and then yielding yourself to the outcome therein. So this may be a slightly different excursion rather than dealing with just an issue and giving you three moods. I'm going to deal with two issues and allow you to paint the moods for yourself. So the first, now I've documented these in some bite-sized things called The Currency of Thought. It's got a nice, cool picture of the man who thinks and all of that other stuff. I'm not putting this out for too much of public consumption for fear of erroneous interpretation therein, but if you want these little memes to add to your own arsenal of thought, kindly send me an email to krish@krishdunham.com, krish@krishdunham.com, and we'll keep that conversation simple and direct. So back to The Currency of Thought. The first mood I want to present, or the first frame I want to present, is something that is written as such. The intellectual futility of our time emanates from a fundamental need to loathe yourself or to hate yourself. Somehow, one's ancestral past grieved another's traditional past. You need to loathe yourself because somehow your past grieved another person's past, or your ancestral past grieved another person's ancestral past. So I want you to posit this in your thought process. There are two people walking down Main Street World, Main Street USA, Main Street India, Main Street Philippines. And one person feels that life is fair and that they've had a fair shot. They don't subscribe to the thought of equality. They just want fairness. They want to play the game. They don't want the rules rigged so that they would win. They just want ability to play. On the other side of the same street is a person who feels that the past was maligned because their ancestors somehow were disenfranchised by a populace that either treated them horribly, enslaved them in some horrific conditions, or took advantage of them either as a revolution or in some other way. So the intellectual futility of our time emanates from a fundamental need to loathe yourself because somehow one's ancestral past grieved another's ancestral or traditional past. So this is the byproduct. The behavior is akin to me going to my neighbor. My neighbor probably owns a dog, and I say to my neighbor, because he owns a dog of a similar breed that bit my uncle 50 years ago, I have decided to slap him today. Now, bear in mind, I have no scars of the actual bite, but revel in the misery of proxy by affiliation. That is the fundamental futility of our time. It is we have grief by proxy, and we have this desire to participate in past misery as if it gives us some kind of banner of thoroughness. This thought process has no cure and wants no solution, because ultimately when they bark about something that happened moons ago and asking for you to pay price for it today, they don't want a solution. They just want to somehow rehash old wounds and find a way to rip those scars open so that when that blood flows, they can now cause a new pain and blame you for that process. Because unless you have a constant connection to past limitations, you forfeit the right to present excuses. So therein, there is no solution, because if there were, people would have to rely on the present for future success and not the past for present failure. So that's the futility of our time. We cling to a past mistake that somehow happened to someone at some time, the scars of which may be just a byproduct, which means I have had no bearing on that past. It is like me in India asking my father to be miserable because somehow between the age of 1934 or the year 1934 and the year 1947, when my father was supposedly a subject of the British Empire for 13 years of his life, that subjugation and that subservience that came from imperial domination should have a generational impact on me. I would go on to write a book about the colonial sins of colonial fathers, etc. You do see the asinine thought process that has only one aperture as a result. If my father, who is now 89 years old, somehow clung to that misery of 13 years of absolute hardship, which means a majority of his existence was away from what transpired. A country became free in 47. As a result of that, today in the country of England, we have a person of Indian origin who is the prime minister. India's own participation with Britain and a separation during independence of Pakistan. India has had three presidents who came from an Islamic background. India, supposedly a male-dominant society, has had a woman president and a woman prime minister. So how much are we going to revel in the fact that there was 200 years of imperial domination that actually made 50% of the population still living below the poverty line somehow subjects of British imperialism? I have no scars of the actual bite because I was born in 1962, a good 15 years after independence. My father may have survived for 13 years during the fight for freedom, but after that he came out unscathed. He got a degree, he got a job, and somehow decided to move forward. But my father had one of two plays. He could either say, hey, we are not going to get ahead because of the domination we've had over our head for those many years, or I'm going to teach you some abilities to succeed in the life that we go ahead to participate in. So the intellectual futility of our time, let me read the whole thing for you, emanates from a fundamental need to loathe yourself because somehow one's ancestral past grieved another's traditional past. This behavior is akin to me slapping my neighbor, the owner of a dog, because a similar breed of dog bit my own uncle 50 years ago. You see, I have no scars of the actual bite, but revel in the misery of proxy. This thought process has no cure and wants no solution because unless you have a constant connection to past perceived limitations, you forfeit the right to present excuses. There is no solution because if there were, people would have to rely on the present for future success and not on the past for present failure. So this week, as you participate in your own currency of thought, the price you are going to pay to think and the cost you are going to bear for not, ask yourself, is there any past in your life, in your generational existence, in your ancestral past, that somehow screams victim? Legitimate or illegitimate, are you clinging to that thought in some way? Even though you were not the grieved party, somehow you belong to that generational grief. And as a result, you're trying to live out victimization by proxy. The second deals with our current threats and moods. So the second currency of thought I want to posit for you is the greatest threat to civilization is not the spouting of insanity by those representing the populace. Think about it. The greatest threat to civilization is not the spouting of insanity by those representing the populace, which means people in halls of Congress, people in halls of power, people within the highest levels of academia, people from the executive and the judicial branch, actually spouting insanity that makes no sense. I grant it, everything is an existential threat, and there may be some real threats, but everything has now been ascribed to this so-called demolition of the planet because other people choose to live. Whether your fight is against the gas-guzzling automobiles that you have a bent against or your desire to make sure that the whole world gets on an electric grid that somehow miraculously will just fall from the sky because apparently the electric grid will have no fossil fuel components within it. That's as dumb as a lady saying, I'm not going to take a plane, I'm going to take a boat because the airplane's carbon footprint is messing up the planet, but yet the boat she's on has nylon and fiberglass and everything else that is a byproduct of that fossil fuel industry. The greatest threat to civilization is not the spouting of insanity by those representing the populace. Just look at their net worth, follow the money, and ask yourself, how does someone go from making $7 million a year while they were at the heights of power and now have $600 million a year as they're complaining about the perils of how others are living? They themselves have three oceanfront properties while they're convincing you that the entire world is going to be underwater. After weighing all the options, the greatest danger is the people who decide that immaturity coupled with audacity is the best ingredient to represent them in the hallowed halls of power. Immaturity coupled with audacity. These are the people who make $20 million a year and are given a script to act a role, which means they are impersonating someone else. And because of that ability to impersonate someone else, are lauded for their artistic effort and their creative capability. And maybe rightfully so. Some of the things that we have seen on the silver screen of people's methods and methodologies have left us gasping at the brilliance at which they were able to bring a part to life. But the audacity and the immaturity of people who just use a script to then tell us how we need to script our own living, jetting all over the world to try to tell you not to fly, living behind gated compounds with electric fences and telling you that the nation cannot have a blockade, making sure that they are guarded by people who carry all of the latest automation in weaponry, and then telling you that you don't have a right to own something because somehow you are too immature to do so. See, a third grader can tell you that spending all you have left you with nothing. When you spend all you have, you're left with nothing. However, when elected, this same individual treats you like a third grader while convincing you that spending with reckless abandon is the best way to ensure security. Maybe Congress needs to have one of those kindergarten boards where they get to pull a demerit, and when they do something dumb, they got to go and pull a star off or pull a demerit or whatever the teachers used to do. If we treat them like third graders, we may escape landing in this third world oblivion. So the two things of currency of thought are, first, the absolute futility that emanates from asking yourself to hate yourself because someone in your past did something bad to someone else in your past, and as a result of that, you have to live out the proxy of misery. And the second, which is probably a greater threat at this time, is the immaturity and the insanity and the absolute audacity of people we elect into power, who tell us how to live lives by not using 1 + 1 = 2, but somehow 1 + 1 = 400, and as a result of that, there is no price to pay. Ponder these week. Send us some emails, your thoughts, your comments, your opinions. If you like this strain, this quasi-sarcastic and yet look with some amount of knowledge and wisdom, we'll bring more to you. But this is your host, Krish Dunham, bringing you the currency of thought, the price you pay to think, and the cost you bear for not. Until next time, good luck. God bless.